are many ways you can support Write Up My Podcast, but we'd love it if you pick just one.
You can join our Rump Club via Patreon from as little as £3 a month.
Get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes content, the inside scoop on upcoming episodes, members-only workshops, no-holds-barred Gwen and Kate Wiffle Waffle, and more.
Simply head to patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. Or if you prefer to be a one-off supporter, you can send us a virtual coffee. Head to buymeacoffee.com/writeupmy.
Follow the links in our show notes and we will love you forever. Thank you.
It's right up my street, my boulevard. It's right up my Straza. Oh my God, it's garden right up there. Ah, it's right up my podcast.
Welcome to Write Up My Podcast. This is Gwen Watson.
And this is Kate White.
And this is the podcast in which we talk to an array, a smorgasbord of really awesome people about the myriad ways to make yourself feel good.
Great use of the word smorgasbord there, by the way. That's brought a smile to my face. And in this episode, episode 21, we speak to cyber psychology expert Daria Kuss all about smartphone addiction.
And this is something that we may have touched upon before in one or two or all of the episodes.
It's a little weakness of Gwen and I's, but, you know, there is hope. Through this episode, we have found hope.
We have. Oh, my goodness. I can't wait to share everything. So before we get into the episode, time for a little bit of wiffle waffle, darling. I thought it would be nice to mention that we have had such an overwhelming response to our last episode. If you haven't caught that yet, that is episode 20, perimenopause, or as we've coined it, perimenago. Because we don't want you to pause.
Go, go, go.
And it's really had such great reactions from the listeners, hasn't it, Kate?
It has. It's been so encouraging, and it's made it feel like a real shared experience, actually, which has been brilliant, hasn't it? And Emma, the expert that we spoke to, the women's health expert, Emma Bardwell, in such an accessible, real, down-to-earth way. I think it was such an interesting and informative chat, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think because you and I both had, like, you know, the emoji. I've used this emoji a lot when describing this episode. You know, the little guy and his head's being blown off.
Yeah,
that's basically the experience that you and I had all the way through that episode, wasn't it? We were like, oh my God. And then, nearly bursting into tears. You actually bursting into tears at the end. And it seems that lots of our listeners have had the same response.
Emotional roller coaster.
Having a little cry and also having a little laugh at the end as us trying to find analogies for talking about dry vaginas. Well, because we're such children.
As one person on Instagram said, when it comes to life-changing events, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. Which couldn't agree more with.
I want to actually mention a couple of people. Sadie, she said, I'm listening to your episode at 5 a.m. She's been going through the same. I'm going to share it with all my mates. It made me laugh and cry and feel more positive. Millie said, I could only listen to a bit before I started freaking out. So excited. Derry says, I'm ashamed to say this is the first of these podcasts I've listened to. All right, Derry, whatever. She said, bloody brilliant. Best bit of self-care I've done in ages. I've been ignoring my symptoms for years. Going to go and talk to the doctor. Becky says, wish I'd listened to this 2 years ago. Steph says, so good to hear real conversation about this.
Yeah, friend of the show, Liv Lawson, said, totally love this episode, ladies. Thanks for the host of info. So important to be having these conversations and sharing this great advice. Emma was fab.
Caroline says, thank you for being fearless and honest about so much of this. I know it resonated with me and will do for so many more people. And so many more people actually are saying that they're now going to go and see their doctors. And and one friend, actually, I'll read, Binks, also friend of the show, she said that her and her friend were discussing it in the pub last night and had a little bit of a tear, remembering Emma's line where she said, some women just don't feel like themselves anymore. They've both been to doctors who've both told them that they're depressed and have tried to prescribe or have prescribed antidepressants. And now they realise that that is not what they need.
I mean, that's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Scott's Mel on Instagram has also said this is essential listening for any woman in her late 30s onwards. Perimenopause is a topic we rarely hear about, and this is so informative and honest, but also fun. Highly recommend. Thanks, Scott's Mel.
Thanks, Scott's Mel. And thank you to everybody who has sent us feedback. And thank you to everybody who's listened. And also to everybody who's now sharing it with their friends. Already, it has outdone all the other episodes of this series. Yeah. So really pleased to see that it is being shared far and wide. Absolutely brilliant.
Definitely. And if you don't mind me asking, Gwen, you mentioned in the outro to the perimenopause episode that you had been prescribed HRT by your GP. Have you started that yet?
Yes. So I started that very day when I was prescribed it by my doctor. So I think I've done about 3 weeks now. So okay. I've done 2 weeks of the estrogen patch, and I've moved on to 1 week down on the combo estrogen and progesterone. And I have to say that overall, so far, I have felt great. And
brilliant.
Yeah. I've had little moments, like I've had flickers of moments where I've literally felt like my old self, I've just had this familiar feeling. It's really intangible, but just this like, oh, I remember this. It's like, I remember me. And I feel like overall as well, I am less tired. I'm being more productive, although I think that is partly to do with this episode as well, weaning myself off my phone.
Yeah.
I feel like I've just had more clarity and generally more energy, which is amazing.
Definitely.
Yeah. There's been a couple of teething issues. I did have some nausea in the first week. I have had a couple of days of headaches. But, you know, it's hard to pinpoint what that is from this. And the thing is, you've got, and side effects will wear off as well. So I've got to just try it for a few, I'm going to go and see the GP after in another couple of months. So, so far, so good. And I realise also HRT isn't for everyone. And some people might not have very bad symptoms, in which case you don't need it. Some people might have far worse side effects. So you might be able to try different types of HRT. Some people might decide, I'm just going to ride out the symptoms and come through at the other end and not bother with HRT at all. There's all different options. But yes, for me, I'm absolutely bloody delighted.
Excellent. It's your little early Christmas present to yourself. Little hormone dose.
Yes.
Merry bloody Christmas.
Oh my God. Honestly. Yeah, I'm absolutely, so far, really, really good.
I'm so pleased.
Yes.
And actually, talking of Christmas, as the C word has cropped up, I've got a little present for you. Would you like to just go down the traditional Christmas route where I send it to you, you unwrap it under the tree on Christmas morning and it's a wonderful surprise? Or shall I show it to you now? I've backed you into a corner here.
I mean... I feel like you should show it to me now.
Do you?
Is that the right answer?
Well done. 10 out of 10. Go to the top of the class. All right. So, little rustle of paper bag.
Oh, this is exciting.
I saw this and I thought of you. Now I'm going to have to hold it up to the Zoom camera. Sorry, listener, but Gwen can describe it to you. Can you see that, Gwen?
Oh, my goodness. I know exactly what this is.
What is it?
Hang on. It's Frida Kahlo. And she's a doorstop.
It's Frida Kahlo painted on a doorstopper. Who doesn't want that for their Christmas present?
I should say
that it's made by a company called meetthewedgies.com, and they're made by a charitable group in Sri Lanka aimed at empowering men and women based in rural areas of the country. And I just saw it and I bloody loved it so much. I'm obsessed with them.
Oh my God.
Who knew doorstoppers could be so exciting?
That's so perfect. Do you know what? I need one for my office door because the door slams shut because I have the window open for little Tortorico to get in and out. And so I really need a doorstopper. That's so perfect.
I have never bought anyone a doorstopper before thinking this was a good thing.
Thank you, Kate.
And they've also got one painted like Prince, which I want so much in my life as well.
Oh, my God. I think you need it. I think you owe it to yourself to have that.
I do.
I've just realised that, of course, this is our Christmas episode, isn't it? Because it's coming out the week before Christmas. And I have turned up entirely empty-handed.
It's all right. Just the love and knowledge that your friendship is... something along those, something about friendship and love. Yeah, piece that together into a sentence and there you go, Merry Bloody
and
Christmas.
That is my gift to you.
Received with gratitude. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Kate. That's very, very lovely. So we all know what I've been doing to make myself feel good, slapping drugs into my body and starting to feel a bit like myself again. How about you, Kate? What have you been doing?
Well, I read this article in the newspaper a couple of weeks ago, which had this brilliant idea. It was all about money and how not to spend so much of it. And it had this brilliant suggestion. So we've all heard of the 5-2 diet. I've never done it. No intentions of doing it. Anyway, this is nothing to do with dieting. But where you fast for 2 days and then you eat whatever you want for 5 days. So this is the spending equivalent of that. So you don't spend anything for 2 days and then you don't really worry about it for the next 5 days of the week. So for 2 days, for me, it's a Monday and a Tuesday. I've put in my diary, in my phone, no spend day, just as a little reminder because I have a memory like a goldfish. And then for those 2 days, other than, you know, sometimes something essential happens, like you've got to fill up with petrol or you've run out of milk. But anything other than the essentials, I'm not allowed to do. Even better, get organised and don't even have to spend even on the most essential things. And then for the other 5 days of the week, just don't really worry about it too much. Obviously, that doesn't like then be like, great, on day three, you buy that holiday to the Maldives. It's not a kind of go nuts on the other days. But actually, what I found is because you're like, it's only 2 days, I can avoid buying that expensive artisan coffee today because I know I'll get one in another 2 days' time. Or I don't need to wander into that craft shop today and buy the painted doorstopper because today's my no-spend day. And actually, I'm beginning to notice that it's breaking the habit of the spending on things that I probably can do without. Because it feels doable because it's a short period of time. But then actually on day three or four, when in theory I can spend something, you know, I can spend my money on something frivolous, I don't feel the need to, or I don't want to in quite the same way because I've got used to just going without it.
I like this a lot because I think a lot of us do have a habit of just buying shit we don't need because there is something rewarding in that process of buying, of spending. And actually, if we were to just pause for 24 hours, I was saying this to my dad the other day. He had a couple of items on his desk, like a telescope that you join to your phone and some Bluetooth speaker. He hadn't even got out the box. I was like, what have you, why have you bought these, you absolute nutter? Because he's seen some advert on Facebook or something. I was like, what you need to do is just pause for 24 hours and ask yourself the next day, do I really need that?
Do I still want to buy it? And if then you're like, yep, still need this in my life, well, crack on. But actually, 9 times out of 10, in 24 hours, you'd be like, you know what? I am fine without the telescope.
The moment has passed.
Yeah, the moment's passed.
Yeah.
And so it's a really good habit to get into. Look at me, breaking habits, changing habits. Not that I was out of control. Don't get me wrong. I've never had some out of control shopping addiction.
I didn't want to ask what drove you to do this.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people whose room is just full of bags from Primark that they've never even opened.
Chris is like, we've got to have a chat, okay?
Yeah.
Things have got to change.
I probably am really bad for buying coffees when I don't really need them, when in about 10 minutes' time I'll probably be at home and I can make one for myself. It's that kind of stuff that has helped me to break the habit of.
Yeah, good. And I'm impressed that you've started this before Christmas.
I know. No Christmas presents for you children this year. I read an article in the paper. It's making me feel good.
It's right up my podcast.
All right, so this episode is all about phone addiction. Thank Christ, it's only taken us 3 series to get there.
Somebody help us, please.
Somebody help us.
And in this episode, we are talking to Daria Kuss. And Daria is a professor in cyber psychology, and she's an author, and she also treats people for internet addiction. Now, Daria comes to this topic from quite a clinical perspective, but that is exactly why we wanted to talk to her, because there's so much chatter out there from a social perspective about whether we're addicted to our phones, whether we're addicted to social media. But we wanted to find out what's actually going on in our brains and if smartphone addiction was actually a real thing. So we started our chat with Daria by asking her, are we addicted to our smartphones?
Now, it's a really good question. I think one of the key things that we need to consider is the amount of time that we spend on an everyday basis on our smartphones. Now, I've posed that question to my master's students the other day, and I think the ranges of smartphone usage, daily smartphone usage, were between 3 and 14 hours on an average day.
14 hours.
And I think that already gives you an indication that actually, you know, people, young people especially, use their smartphones for quite extended periods of time. And when we're thinking about the usages of smartphone, we can think about really the kinds of things that we are doing on them. So the smartphones have become everything. They have become the way in which we connect to the world, how we engage with our social media, with our friends, with work, how we wake up in the morning. You know, we've got our calendars on our smartphones, our games, our music, our photos, all of our entertainment is in our smartphones. Our work is in there. Our social life is in there. And I think, you know, really considering this, I don't think it's a surprise to really think about the amount of time we spend, you know, as a planet, really, using our smartphones.
Yeah. Well, yes, when you put it like that.
Now, your other question is really, you know, to what extent may this indeed be addictive or problematic? Whereas we really have to draw a line between, you know, use that is potentially problematic, where people spend a lot of time using smartphones, which a lot of us will do. I mean, we have to just face the reality, and actual addiction.
And so what are those elements that need to be fulfilled in order for a behaviour to be seen as damaging?
The main criterion that we have found in our research, and that has been found by colleagues in the research that they're doing, is really the significant impact on the daily life of the user. So that the use really impacts them negatively on an everyday basis. It may impact their work, their social relationships, their parenting, their health as well, over an extended period of time. So it needs to be a considerable impact that really is there for the user not to feel particularly good in terms of their mental health and well-being. In addition to this, you will find the other very important criteria that are typically used within substance-related addictions, such as tolerance, where you need to spend increased amounts of time using your smartphone. Withdrawal, so experiencing both physiological as well as psychological withdrawal symptoms if you're unable to use your smartphone. And I think in the context of the smartphone, nomophobia comes into play here. So
nomophobia.
No mobile phone phobia, basically having the anxiety of being without your phone. You know, you can talk about separation anxiety, increased attachment here as well. Lots of people experience this. And there are a number of other criteria as well, such as loss of control, for example. So we know that in the clinical context, so the loss of control often brings people into treatment where they realize, actually, I can't help myself. I've tried everything. I've talked to people, but I really require professional help in order to overcome the problems.
Is there something happening to our brains when we are engaging and interacting with our smartphones for an unhealthy period of time?
And what is happening is the limbic brain, so the mid part of your brain, is going to be activated, and it is a part of the brain where your motivation sits, or your emotions as well. So every time we're using our smartphones, every time somebody likes some sort of post that we've posted somewhere on any kind of social media applications, we get that little dopamine hit, you know, in that part of our brain where we are experiencing reward. It gives us a sense of pleasure. It may be very short-lived, but the interesting thing about the brain is it learns really quickly, and it very quickly learns to associate that little bit of a reward, and it will expect that reward. So, you know, all of a sudden you need to increase the amount of time that you're spending in order to have the same pleasurable experience, which may really explain why we tend to spend more and more time scrolling through those news feeds to see what's going on. And it will also explain why the behavior may be maintained over extended periods of time.
So the more we need it, the more we use it, the more we need to use it.
Absolutely.
And I think it's interesting you talking about that people come to you saying, I've got a problem and I need help getting out of this addiction. Whereas I think there's a whole swathe of the community, of the world, you know, if we just think about our own friends, who constantly report having time stolen by these devices, and constantly report like, oh, I got up, I flicked onto Insta and it was an hour later, or I just thought I'd go on before bed and I've ended up going to bed an hour later because I've been bloody trawling through Instagram reels. Damn you, Instagram reels. And, it's just, I think there's a lot of us who are just accepting this addiction on a daily basis. We're having time stolen, and I think it is impacting our mental health, isn't it? But we maybe don't realise.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when we're thinking about our smartphones, using them has been so habituated. So it's become a habit. This is something that we do. We don't even think about it. It's a natural thing that we do on a regular basis when we're waiting for the bus, when we're waiting in a supermarket, you know, to pay for our items. Whatever we do, we will be picking up our smartphones. I think, you know, they have become really, you know, digital pacifiers.
Yes.
They help us to resolve problems that we have. They help us feeling a bit better. They help us, you know, being entertained. And I think at the same time, what we're losing is these periods of silence, or those periods of solitude, where we can think about the world, where we can reflect about ourselves, about the day that we've had and things like that. All those moments that we've previously had are now taken up by, as we're saying, you know, using Instagram, checking what our friends have been up to, reading the news and just engaging with the smartphone. So that can be problematic in some ways.
Yes, and the lack of boredom in our lives, the loss of boredom in our lives, should I say. Some people say that that's a real problem, because boredom can have a real positive outcome as far as creativity goes. And if you don't allow your brain to get into that state, because as soon as you feel that tapping at the door, you pick up your phone, then you're missing out on where that boredom can take you as far as creative thinking.
It's creative thinking, it's scientific thought, you know. This is exactly when you've got the eureka moments, when new discoveries are being made. It's when you've got periods of relaxation, periods of boredom, as you're mentioning it. And nowadays, you know, we've almost eradicated those kinds of opportunities that we otherwise would have had. It requires us to give ourselves a break. Sometimes researchers refer to it as, you know, taking a digital sabbatical, where they may go tech-free for a weekend or perhaps even for a week. It's possible, and very often when I talk to participants in my research, they also say to me that, yes, it is possible to do it. And when they actually do it, they feel almost a sense of relief of being able to not having to be connected all the time, because there's a lot of pressure on people being present. And if they're not present, they've got the fear of missing out. So they're experiencing FOMO.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a really difficult kind of a construct. So people find it difficult to be without their phones, but at the same time are relieved when they are without their phones.
When I've had those periods, whether it's been on holiday or whether my phone's broken, you know, when something's happened, you have that initial like, oh my God, I'm unconnected. And then, it's a release.
It's a huge
relief.
And it's
so nice.
Yeah.
And for me, what I love is not having the 250 WhatsApp messages a day. And don't get me wrong, like the ones that I'm happy to have. Well, no, this is why I suddenly thought I should clarify that. There's ones, like the ones from you, Gwen, that I'm delighted to have. The ones that I find really get me down is all the groups, all the WhatsApp groups that we all belong to, when 90% of the messages aren't relevant to you. And then I've got a few friends who are really pushing back against that now. They're like, I'm sorry, I love you all, but I'm just going to leave this group, because I've just got to cut down on all of the WhatsApp messages I'm getting, because it's that feeling, as you said, Daria, that feeling of wanting to be present, not wanting to miss out, yet it's exhausting to keep up.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, I just felt a relief you even saying those words. Hey guys, I love you, but I'm going to leave this group. How easy is that?
And I know.
Yeah.
No one cares. Everyone's like, cool, yeah, go for it.
There are also people out there who don't know how to mute notifications on groups. If you are one of those persons, if you are listening right now and you are one of these people, then do it immediately. On a slightly different phone-related topic, I saw something the other day that made me laugh. It's like, yeah, when you're sat around at the dinner table together, having your, or out at a pub or something, having your phone face down on the table does not count. Just do not have it on the table. We're not being fooled. And that is exactly what I do. It's like, look at me, I'm putting it face down, guys. This is me being present.
This big thing about turning it over. Yeah. You've got my full attention right now.
Not.
Can we talk a little bit about self-control? Because we touched on it earlier about how when people are scrolling through Insta Reels, as sort of Gwen's already mentioned, that you're aware at the time that this is not making me feel good, yet we cannot stop the action. So what can we do to help strengthen our self-control in those moments?
It is really difficult. I think we're all very, very easily fooled into, you know, using technology a lot because we have the perception maybe, you know, it's a way for us to escape our everyday lives, or it's a way for us to relax or feel entertained. I think it's particularly difficult when you've had a hard day anyway, when, you know, you're feeling stressed, when you're feeling tired. And I would always start on days where the situation looks a bit better, where, you know, you might be a bit more upbeat, where you can try and decrease the time that you're spending on Instagram. You know, there are settings in your phone and there are settings on some media apps that will alert you to the amount of time that you're spending, where you can cut down on how much time you're using for Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, etc. There are a number of apps that you can download on your phone that will alert you to the amount of time that you're spending. And simply by becoming aware of the time you're spending, I think you might become more mindful of how you're using technology. And perhaps that might lead you also to use it in a more effective and goal-oriented way. So specifically to contact particular people for particular reasons, rather than just scrolling mindlessly through content for hours and hours on end.
You light up every room. You're the one I want to see. The answer to my questions, you know just what I need. And when I get you in my hands, you move in sync with me. You're my iPhone 23SE. And I will always love you until next year. The 24 looks sweet.
In our sleep episode when we were talking to Dr. Narina about sleep, and I was saying they should help us more. We were talking about not using a phone before bed and the impacts that it has, you know, in basically getting your brain all fired up when you should be winding down. And she's like, who are they? Who should be helping? You should be doing it. You know, you should just be having your phone out of your bedroom and making an effort. And but when it's a highly addictive thing, it's like you were talking about self-control, Kate. It's very hard for us to exercise self-control. But there are, I feel like they are, phone manufacturers are recognizing this now more, aren't they? I read this in an article very briefly, so I don't have the details, but I feel like they are taking a bit more responsibility. Is that true? Am I just being hopeful?
I think there is a trend by some of the big media conglomerates to really think about, you know, how can we improve people's mental health by means of design features of our products. So, you know, how the phones operate, the kinds of settings you can use in order to change, you know, the brightness of your screen, for example. There is always that kind of dimmed mode that you can use when using the phones in the evening to help your brain, as you're saying, to wind down, to become a bit more relaxed. I have written considerably really thinking about, you know, prevention approaches and increasing corporate social responsibility. And at the moment, what we find, especially in the context of mental health, and also thinking about the recent Facebook whistleblower, even though there are a few ways in which companies are trying to improve their design features to support the users, I think too little is being done, too little money is being spent on it, and I think this is highly problematic.
I wanted to go back to something you mentioned earlier. Sorry, Toto the cat is really wanting to be very involved. She's absolutely fascinated. She has a particular interest in this because I've spent many hours of my life watching animal rescue videos on Dodo. You know, the Dodo videos that you get on Instagram and Twitter. I've watched so many of those. I'd love to rescue an animal. And now I've got my very own one. And literally, I'll catch myself still watching these videos while she's sat there playing on her own. It's moments like that. It's like that where I'm like, oh God, I've got a problem. I've got a real life cat now. I should be really present. Something you mentioned earlier was, I don't know if you called it phone distraction, and basically how it impacts on us, like while we're working or studying, etc. And that is so real for me. I'll have it next to me as I'm working. So I'm just casually responding to WhatsApps all the way through as I'm doing work. And I will get to the end of a piece of work and think, that took me twice as long as it should have taken me. And I think this is a real day-to-day problem for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, our research has really indicated that phone distraction, smartphone distraction, is a thing. It is problematic. It may decrease our attention spans. And I think about it, you know, in the context of young people using it, where their brains may have not fully developed, you know, they continue developing until the early 20s. So when the brains are still developing, you will create those neural connections, the connections in the brain in different ways when technology is being used. So thinking about potential problems with attention longer term as well, thinking about how people are able to engage with one another. So that skill of having an actual face-to-face conversation appears to be, you know, really difficult to attain by a lot of the young people nowadays. They find it difficult to maintain their focus on extended tasks where they really need to sit down, write their essays, for example, you know, for exams and so on. And I think it may be problematic. And I think, you know, over the coming years, we may see the repercussions of that.
And what might those repercussions be?
Well, as I've mentioned previously, you know, problems in connecting with others face to face, where we very often, instead of speaking to them, we would text them, you know, where you can edit, where you can delete, where you can change things around to just appear better, appear a bit more eloquent, for example. Problems with attention, so, you know, the problems in focusing, the problems in completing tasks, and constantly needing significantly more time, as you were saying, to complete what it is that you're currently doing.
You mentioned in, well, not you mentioned, but I know you've spent some time as well researching addiction to online dating apps. Let's talk about that for a little bit. How is that changing the way people approach their romantic relationships?
Oh, what a doozy.
Yes, online dating. We've been researching this, and you know, online dating really offering the opportunity for people to connect in a romantic way as well, making it easier, let's say, to find the right partner, to find a romantic mate, a soulmate, if you wish. But it doesn't come without its problems. So thinking about the shopping mentality that lots of people have when they are using online dating, where there are so many potential mates out there that, you know, the next best person is really just one swipe away, where you may have already seen somebody who might be interesting, but actually, you know, that next person just ticks the boxes a little bit more. And that constant thought that there will be somebody better out there, which can lead to relationship problems.
Oh God, that has made me laugh and also cringe and a bit sad inside, it being called the shopping mentality.
Yes, but it's like that, isn't it? It's like, I want to get this, and this.
And but look at this shiny new person. He's got a beard.
Shiny new thing. And yeah, that thought that the next person might be even better. Yeah, that's tantalising. It's hard to resist.
Oh, God. But it's just another thing to scroll through, isn't it? And it's getting in the way of real connection in a way, isn't it? Because you're having these constant, you're presenting yourself in a certain way. Like you said, you're curating your
you're creating how you're seen,
and you're doing it in a way that you can edit and present and etc. rather than real life down the pub, balls to the wall. This is who I am.
Absolutely. Yeah. You will present yourself in an idealized form, you know, on online dating platforms, on your social media platforms. It will be the ideal version of yourself, which in many cases can be quite different from your real life version. And I think that is a problem that is affecting particularly young teenage girls considerably, where they want to attain those, you know, goals or ideals that they see on Instagram in terms of the people that they're following, thinking that this is the norm, thinking that this is what they should be living up to. But we know that it's far away from reality. And it also impacts, you know, connection in sexual behaviors for young people, where they're viewing a lot of pornographic content online and they think this is how their relationships, their romantic relationships should be.
Yeah. And it's getting in the way of authentic connection. And across all of these ways, in sex lives, in friendships, it's all getting in the way of authentic connection, isn't it?
One thing I found interesting when listening to the interviews by various people from Facebook was that they all said that they don't use it and that they don't allow their children to use it.
Absolute bastards.
I know. And do you mind me asking, Dara, do you use these social media platforms?
Yes, I do use Facebook and Twitter. However, I don't use Instagram. Okay. And, you know, main reasons for me are similar to lots of other people's reasons is, you know, the possibility of connection. As I've got friends and family all around the world, it's just the easiest way of actually engaging with them. But at the same time, you know, with those online communities offering you the possibility to find people who may be interested in the same things that you're interested in. Also thinking about local communities and so on. So I think, you know, if you're able to really think about the reasons for why you're using the platform and use them in a goal-directed way, I don't see anything wrong with it. I think they can actually be quite enriching. You know, there is so many opportunities when you're thinking about marginalized populations, populations who otherwise wouldn't have the possibility to get together, you know, people with disabilities, caring responsibilities, and so on. So I think it's really important for us to also understand the benefits that social media can bring to our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we can just use it in a far more healthy and productive way, can't we? And feel clearer in our lives. I think the thing is that when it permeates every aspect of your life, when you're eating, when you're cooking, when you're driving, when you're interacting with others, it feels like there's no space from it. It feels like you don't have that time to be present. And like you said, to process.
Yeah, you feel mentally foggy, I find, if I've been using it too much, because you're sort of torn between the digital world and the present world. And it leaves me with this weird sort of brain fog, like I'm not fully able to focus or concentrate on the real world, actually, if I've spent too much time in the digital world.
Yeah. And our brains haven't actually evolved that quickly, have they? So we're asking our brains to do too much. I remember reading, like, when you're scrolling through your Twitter feed, for every single post you see, you are having to make a decision whether to like it, whether to engage with it further, whether to scroll past it. So that speed at which we're asking our brains to make decisions, they're not used to it, are they? They haven't caught up with that yet. So that's what leads to the brain fog, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, your brain can only process so much information at a time. And through technology, through our smartphones, our social media, we are bombarded with messages, with advertisements, with, connection requests, etc. It is really difficult to process everything at the same time, especially when you're being bombarded with all of this over extended periods of time on an everyday basis.
I like to live in a predictable way. I have the same old sandwich every day. The same routine, the same ideas. The same tomatoes and the same cheddar cheese. Oh, I'm willing to try something new. With a nickel, pickle, pickle and some chutney too. I'll give it a try, yes, I'll give it a go. I might just like it, well, you just never know. But I'll always love a cup of tea.
So as per usual, we like to try everything ourselves. So we asked Daria for her top tips on how to wean yourself off your mobile phone.
What I would recommend is, first of all, actually make time in the day for your smartphone use. You know, actually, it allows you to really be very focused. So give yourself maybe an hour in the morning and another hour in the evening or so to get it out of your system, where you can connect with people, where you can read your news, where you can look through your Instagram feed, etc. You get it out of your system and you can spend the rest of your day doing other things without having to worry that you're missing out on a lot of stuff that is going to happen. So that's one of the things. In addition to this, what I would recommend is to make sure to create technology-free spaces in the home environment. So there may be your bedroom, for example, which should be entirely technology-free. And they will have a number of benefits. Also thinking about, you know, your sleeping patterns, improving the quality of life and your physical comfort as well, as a consequence of that. And technology-free times during the day. So, for example, meal times. to ensure nobody in your home environment is using technology whilst you're having a meal together where you can have a conversation. Good old school conversations as well. You know, really trying to encourage those kinds of things, the basic things that connect us to people, that give us that kind of reward that we're trying to achieve by means of using technology, by means of using social technology. And the final thing that I would say is, you know, when working, when at university or at your job, make sure to put the phone away. So out of sight, out of mind. Put it in your pocket, put it in your bag. When you're not looking at it, then it is not going to distract you. So smartphone distraction, it may be an issue. And you know, a simple way of eliminating that is simply by putting it away when you're not using it.
Thank you so much to Daria for taking the time to have that really interesting chat with us. Daria has written the Oxford Handbook of Cyber Psychology, and she's also written a book called Internet Addiction: Advances in Psychotherapy. The links to those books are going to be in the show notes. And she also asked us to put her contact details in there in case anybody wants to get in touch with her to talk about the research that she's doing or if you had any questions for her. So head over to the show notes and you can find all of that info in there.
So, Kate, now we've done things slightly differently this time, haven't we? So I've basically attempted some of the top tips that Daria suggested for us. And you have done a phone detox.
I have, which I will tell you all about in a minute. But let's have a chat about some of the things that you've done based on the top tips that Daria gave us.
All right. So the main ones I took on, I thought, you know, easy, easy, catchy monkey, as the phrase kind of goes. I thought, what are the easy things that I can try is to just not have my phone with me all the bloody time. So one of the things that I was doing since our sleep episode was having my phone not in my bedroom. So just charging it up in my office. But I was still finding that sometimes if I walk up at bedtime with my phone in my hand, I might just lay on my bed for a little bit with it, etc. So this time I thought, right, I'm going to keep my phone downstairs, charge my phone downstairs, and not allow it up the stairs. Because up the stairs,
like a naughty dog.
Just like a naughty little dog that keeps pissing everywhere. I'm going to keep it locked up in the kitchen. So, because my office is upstairs and my bedroom is upstairs, so I would love them to be phone-free zones. So that is what I have been attempting this week. And
yes.
And it has been absolutely brilliant. So there's been like a couple of... it's been brilliant. There's been like some moments where I look to my left and there's my phone next to me as I'm sat there at my desk. I'm like, how did that get there?
How the hell did that get there?
For God's sake.
Such a mystery.
I know, and then having to walk it back downstairs again, or like, you know, anything you do. Like when I was sat there doing some admin and I was signing up, I was signing up for my new internet provider and something else. All of it is like, we're sending a PIN to your mobile phone. Oh, Jesus, I have to go back downstairs.
God, it's impossible.
So many times I had to go back downstairs to get my phone, do my thing, go, and then put it back downstairs again. But basically, all of that aside, I have been mostly very strict, and I have found that I've just been so much more productive. Oh my God.
Really? Yes. Really? You've noticed the difference?
Oh God. Because I mean, like I was saying in the interview, like if I'm working, work will literally take me twice as long because I'm just... Yeah. Instantly, like if WhatsApp pings in or somebody rings, I'm instantly grabbing it. And
which is crazy.
It is. And it takes your mind a little bit to get back into the task at hand, doesn't it? So instead, I've just been actually working. And it's really amazing the number of times I find myself, like if there's a pause or if my work feels like, I'm working on a tricky edit or something, I will just go to reach for my phone. And it's just, I realise how many times I've used it to punctuate my days and my thoughts. And so I've really noticed that.
That really makes me think about a phrase that Daria used about calling it a digital pacifier. And that's exactly it. In a moment where it's maybe a bit stressed or a bit heightened, it's kind of a way to escape from the moment at hand.
Yes.
the work's a bit tricky, so dive into your phone. You don't have to think about it for a little bit.
Yes, exactly. And also, if a thought pops into my mind, like, oh, I've got to message somebody about that, or, oh, I wanted to book that ticket for this, I will just do it. And so instead, yeah, what I was finding myself doing is keeping a pad next to my laptop and writing those things down. And then,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. Because then what I do is when I go for a break, I will then be on my phone and I'll be checking. Yeah. And then I'll have a bank of messages to read rather than just one or two at a time. Yeah. But yeah, so I'll read it while I'm having my cup of tea or having my lunch, and then leave it downstairs again when I come back up. So mostly I've been quite strict, and mostly it's just had a really, really positive impact. I've been on my phone so much less than I usually am.
That is amazing. Yeah. And has anyone noticed? Have you had any friends messaging going, Gwen, what's your problem? Why aren't you replying to me?
With crying face emojis.
Yeah, but
funnily enough, no.
Has Mr. Instagram messaged you going, why don't you love me anymore?
No, I've not missed out on anything. So,
no.
Which is really strange.
Do you reckon you'll be able to keep this up? Do you think this will now be a habit?
Yeah, I think it's got to be, you know. When I realise just how much it's impacting on my work, and just that feeling you get. God, when I was getting stuff done, when I'm getting stuff done and I'm like, tick, and then I'll go to my like admin to-do list and I'm like, and tick. That gives me such a sense of achievement.
Brilliant.
Rather than multitasking for 2-3 hours and getting that one thing or one or two things done and coming out the end of it going, oh, why has this taken me so long?
God, we've all been there.
Yeah.
It's so infuriating, isn't it? It's like, come on, why am I being so unproductive here? Yet I'm really busy. What's that all about?
Yeah. So there's other things that she suggested, isn't there? Like only having specific time. Well, she suggested only like checking your phone 3 times a day. I'm not there yet, lady, but no. Definitely checking it considerably less. And actually on that note, I was dating somebody recently. That's a whole other podcast. And he literally does what she was saying. He only checks his phone like a handful of times a day. And if he's
really
working,
yeah,
he's not on his phone. Very infuriating when you're the other end going, why haven't they texted me back? Don't they love me anymore?
Yeah. Is this the end of our relationship? It's been 10 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, now he's texting me back because now he's having his lunch break. But I was actually really impressed that at that kind of discipline.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually, the far healthier way to be. And I'll build up to that. I'll build up to having just certain times of the day when I check it. But so far, so good.
Isn't it nuts how it can easily just creep into all areas of our life? If you let it slip,
God,
can just become so much more dominant than it should be. It's nuts.
Yeah. So on that note, what have you done, dolls?
Well, to mix it up a little bit, we thought I would do a different challenge. So I've been doing a challenge set by a journalist called Catherine Price, who wrote a book called How to Break Up With Your Phone. And in the show notes, we'll give you the link to where you can find this challenge because it's free. You can just link to it off her website and it talks you through day by day. It's a screen life balance digital detox 3-day challenge that she sets. So yes, we'll put the link in the show notes so you can all do it too. But it was not what I expected. It really got me thinking about some things that I hadn't actually thought about. So
can I first ask, did you do it for the whole 3 days?
So I did do it for the whole 3 days, but the whole point of it, at the very top, she kind of sets a scene that this is not a put your phone in a locked drawer for 3 days and don't touch it. This is more of a reality check that we can't deny the fact that our phones are useful in our lives. Like Daria said, we've got so much in there. We've got our diaries, we've got our work emails, we've got, you know, you want to phone your mum or whatever. So we do need to use our phones.
Yeah.
So it's not a cold turkey. What does she talk about her colleagues doing? A phone sabbatical.
Mm.
It's more of a breaking the unhealthy elements of how you use your phone. So I did go on it. when I had to sort out meeting my friend, or when I had to, you know, things like you, I had to get the pin off it for using the other thing, that type of stuff. So I did go on it, and it asks you each day at the start of the day, it asks you some questions. So the day one, the questions it was asking about, what are the real problem areas of my phone? What are the elements of it that I struggle with? So for me, it was WhatsApp, all the messages on WhatsApp, wanting to feel like I wanted to reply to them as soon as possible, and Instagram, the scrolling of Instagram. But so I just left it downstairs. And the first day I did go really cold turkey. I literally didn't go near my phone till the end of the day. And I felt it such a release. I felt it really freeing. And it made me realise that I find it quite stressful keeping on top of messages.
Yeah.
And feeling an obligation to reply to them. Now, obligation's not because the person has any expectation, really. It's totally from me. It's totally on me, that. And it's kind of mixed up with a sort of FOMO element of, if I don't reply, I'm missing out on something. So it's a real double-edged sword, that, which is really strange. So day two. The whole point of day two's assignments, as she called it, was to try and notice when and why you're reaching for your phone. So she says the point isn't necessarily to stop yourself from checking your phone, but just to train yourself to notice when you're on it or when you're about to reach for it. She suggested putting something like a rubber band or a hairband around your phone so that every time when you reach for your phone, you notice that there's something strange about it because you've got this hairband or something on it. And that's enough for your brain to trigger a, okay, why do I need to pick up my phone response?
Oh, that's interesting. So it's cutting through because it's habitual. So it's cutting through that habit. Yeah.
And she also gives everyone a screensaver to download and put on their phone that says, what for, why now, and what else?
Let's have a look. Hold it up to the camera, doll.
Can you see that?
What for, why now, what else? I like it.
So whenever I pick up my phone, I see that message. Like, why am I going on my phone? Why do I need to go on my phone right now? What else could I be doing if I was not on my phone?
Nice.
And that's another thing that she got you thinking about, like, what would I like to be doing if I wasn't going to spend the next 20 minutes just randomly scrolling through it? And for me, I was like, I'd quite like to just sit and read, or just sit and be with my thoughts for a bit, rather than filling that dead space with my phone. In the same way as you're saying, you've been so productive with work, you've just got so much more work done because you've not wasted that time in your phone. For me, I was thinking the times when I tend to disappear into my phone is when I want to switch my brain off a little bit. And actually, rather than disappearing into Instagram or whatever, just to sit and just read or think about things or read the paper or a book, that feels good.
And be present and tap into, I think, because that's what it's really doing, is distracting us. And like she was saying in the interview, or like you were saying, that it's stopping us being bored. It's stopping us. It's stopping that moment where we could be processing thoughts or being creative and having new creative thoughts. And so it's having that, it's allowing that space, isn't it, for us to actually, for our brain to actually bloody breathe.
Yeah. And it's tiring. It's mentally tiring when you're trying to do something, but you're also kind of distracted by what's going on in your phone and you're trying to split your thoughts in multiple directions. It's pretty knackering. It's quite nice just to focus on one thing and do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to do nothing for a bit.
Yeah. And I think that's actually something we should be doing more and more.
Yeah. The final day, she gave some really amazing tips that really feed off the information that Daria has given us, just another element that we can maybe build into the way we think about our phones. Would you like to hear them?
Oh my God, yes, so much.
So this was interesting. She said to examine your home screen. So your home screen on your phone should only contain tools.
All right,
she says to delete or move to your second screen any app that has the potential to suck you in. So we all know what our trouble apps are, don't we?
Yes.
So get them off your home screen, because the distraction of seeing them might be, or not seeing them might be enough to stop you getting sucked into them.
Very good
And
advice.
In that same thought process, she then said, put all the apps on your second screen into a folder. You should end up with two screens, no more than that, on your phone. And the point of making folders is to make it less likely for you to open an app because you're not tempted by its icon, because it's hidden in a folder.
Nice.
Which makes a lot of sense. And then I really like this. She recommends to add at least one app to your home screen that supports a positive habit. So it could be a meditation app. It could be a guitar tuner app. Whatever it is that gives you that warm glow. So when you check your phone out of instinct, you'll see a trigger for a positive habit before you see a trigger for a negative habit.
That is such good advice.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
What would be,
so have
what
you done that?
Yours?
Have you done that to your phone?
No, I haven't done any of these things yet. This is what I'm going to do after I call today. I'm going to do it. I don't know what would be my positive habit app. It might be my pelvic floor squeeze one.
And squeeze.
And squeeze. I won't go on Instagram, but I'll have a squeeze.
This is all absolutely brilliant advice. And actually, so that really, oh my God, and really complements everything that Daria said so well.
Totally.
Yeah, I feel like it's actually manageable.
It's totally doable. It's just being a bit more mindful about it and actually using your phone for something, for it to be a tool, not a distraction. Using it for something specific as opposed to just aimlessly floating through it.
Yeah, yeah. So, Kate, what elements are you going to use then from these tips and tricks? What are you going to, and after your detox, are you going to take some of this on into your life?
Definitely. I'm going to do that whole arranging my screens on my phone. I'm going to do what Daria said about not having it in my bedroom, leaving it downstairs. And actually, I'm going to try and do the designated times during the day. So first thing in the morning, at the end of the day, and then maybe at lunchtime. And outside of that time, I'm going to try and put it somewhere else and not think about it.
Yeah, great.
Unless my mum calls, and then don't worry, mum, I'll pick up. What about you, Gwen? Have you taken anything from this that you're going to continue?
Yes. Hopefully this is going to be habits that I can embed and will become second nature. I do have to be aware, though, obviously, it's all very well that my phone now belongs downstairs, so I'm not distracted by it upstairs. So I do still have to have some discipline when I'm downstairs.
Yeah. When you're downstairs, the danger zone.
Because I do have a little bit of a mentality of like, oh, now I'm going to reward myself by scrolling through Instagram reels. So last night, for example, a friend was coming over for dinner and I was really tired after I'd done a lot of work yesterday. And I thought, oh, what I could do is just go up, do this chunk of work, come down, have a nap before he arrives. What actually happened was me scrolling through Instagram for 45 minutes, going up and do a chunk of work, coming down, sitting down and him walking through the door and me being really tired for our entire evening and rather than refreshed and chatty. So I was like, that's totally because I got sucked into my phone. So yeah, there's still more to go. Yeah. And so, yeah, some of those tips and tricks that you've brought up, that you've added in today will be really, really useful. So yeah, I think it sounds positive and doable. I love this.
Me too. Brand new us, just in time for the brand new year. Thank you to everyone for listening and a great big Merry Christmas from both of us. We really appreciate all of you.
We really, really do. Without you, this would not be possible. Actually, it would be possible, but it'd be a lot less fun and it'd be absolutely pointless, to be honest.
Just
me and Kate talking in our bedrooms to ourselves.
Yes. And you can get in touch if you want to send us a Christmas email. You can email us at writeupmypodcast@gmail.com. We always read all of the emails and messages that we get from everyone. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate it. And of course, we really love your reviews as well. So even if you don't listen to us on Apple, you can go across to Apple and leave us a review and a rating, which makes us look good and makes it easier for us to get future interviewees. So we really, really appreciate that. And also, we just really love reading them.
Exactly. And you can also head over to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. Go and check it out.
We do have a bit more Wiffle Waffle up there and extras from our episodes too.
We do indeed. And this is always a good opportunity to say a great big thank you to our fabulous team.
That is Andrew Grimes on the music, who's an absolute maestro, and Erica Francis George on the artwork, who makes us look awesome.
And we will be back after the new year with our next episode, where we're going to be looking at the lost art of letter writing, but not just any old letters, my friend. We are talking smutty letters. So join us in 2022 for the next episode of Write Up My Podcast.
Actually, I think it's coming out before the new year, isn't it?
Oh, right. We'll scrap all of that then.
Yeah. Actually, we're not sure. We're aiming for the dead zone between Christmas and New Year to keep you amused. But if we're too full of sherry, it'll be in 2022. How about that? Very Merry Christmas to everybody.
And meanwhile, keep trying things
to make you feel good. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Tell me, did you like the podcast, Brian?
No!
Oh. If, unlike Brian, you thought our podcast was really great, then don't hold back, like, subscribe, and tell your mate. But if, like Brian, you thought our podcast wasn't fun, then just keep quiet, don't feel the need to tell anyone. We'd love to hear from you if you've got some thoughts to share. Such rich and lovely views that all should be aware of. But I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate. 'Cause we don't need grumpy pants bringing everybody down. No, we don't need negative Nellies making people frown. No. So I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate.